So last time we gave a share, we talked about Lumino or Luminehu, where Hashem makes everything according to its species. That was on day three. We talked about vegetation and how everything is given its own kind of freedom, and yet the freedom is bound to Hashem's very limitation, very severe limitations, the boundaries that it has to live within. Rather than go through the next 3 days or 4 days of creation, detail for detail, all the psukim, what I'm rather going to do is just explain a Medrash Rabbah that Hirsch quotes that really sums it all up and really is also the, it's going to lead into what we're going to talk about in the creation of man, about the sequence of events in the first 3 days and then the next 3 days and what that's leading to. Basically, on day one, its parallel was what happened on day four. Day two, its parallel was on day five, and day three, its parallel was on day six, as follows. On day one was the creation of light in a general sense. But on day four, that's when the light bearers were created. So now this is like the theoretical creation, but where's it gonna go? Where's the Lamaisa? That was on day four, with the sun and the moon and the stars. On day two, the expansion of expanses of water and air were created in general sense. But on day five, they were given their world of life. So that's when the fish, and that's when the birds were created, the flying insects, whatever. On day three, dry land was adorned with vegetation. On day six, so that land now receives its living inhabitants. That's when the animals are created. That's all the pattern of creation. When you get to day seven, this Medrash explains the following. The Medrash Rabbah, I think it's a Perek Yud Aleph of the Medrash Rabbah. And there's the Mefarshim there, the Mahar Zeus says, look in Perek Yud Beis. And basically, I think what Hirsch got was from those two together. Perek Yud Beis, I think it's Simon Hay. Day seven, Hirsch writes the following. It marks the beginning of a new world. That's day seven. A world in which man is to be educated to God. That's the purpose of day seven. On this day, I'm just quoting Hirsch directly, spiritual light was created. And what is the spiritual light? What does that even mean? It's the light of recognition of God. So that's in the theory. We have these parallel days. We've got the creation of light in theory, and then there's light bearers. We have all the other things we described, and then there's the Lamaisa of it. But where is the Lamaisa of this creation on day seven of this recognition of God? Where does it have its landing in the world? So what's its ben zug, the way the Medrash puts it? Every other day has its ben zug. It's way where it landed and came out Lamaisa very practically in this world. But what's the Lamaisa of a day that's designed for recognition of God, a spiritual light? And they complained to Hashem, you know, midrashically. And Hashem's answer was, Knesset Yisrael, he ben Zilcha, Klal Yisrael. They are the eighth work of creation, the way Hirsch puts it. That's a new creation, Klal Yisrael. And we too are bearers of this spiritual light that was put into the world for the purpose of recognizing God. Now, what we're going to hear soon is not just about Klal Yisrael, it's really about all of humanity. But bear in mind that Hashem, who knows the future and knows where the world is going, even though there's this hope and ultimate destiny for where all of mankind's going to go, and ultimately man will recognize that. And this idea of day seven wasn't made for Jews to keep Shabbos. It was an idea in Shabbos Bereishis, which we spoke about some time ago, is really for all of humanity to be able to stop and notice there's a God in the world. But when the world didn't do it, Klal Yisrael becomes the vehicle through a heightened level of what Shabbos is about in the course of history. Ultimately, the world will learn through how we declare the Shabbos message. And one of the main functions of Klal Yisrael is this whole idea of Shabbos, not just because Shabbos is the thing, our entire life is that. really living by Hashem's will is the declaration of Shabbos. But Shabbos itself, the total focus of Shabbos is about that. So that's the structure and creation of the 7 days. I thought that was very important before you hear the rest of what we're going to talk about tonight. Moving ahead, so about the levels of how creation works, this is also very interesting, about the increasing levels of independence. So Hirsch writes the following. When Hashem gives a tzivui to the fish or the birds, or to the animals, to pru revu, to that they should increase. So these are obviously, they have a capacity is what he put into them. They're not thinking, they're just instinctual creatures. Birds, water creatures, but this is built into the Bria. Plants, he says, when plants are created, so they are bound to the body of Mother Earth, right? The Earth creates these, that's how it says it in the Pesukim, the Earth brings forth this vegetation, but the vegetation itself stays stuck to the very thing that created them, the very vehicle that Hashem used. That's one level. But then you get to water creatures, and they're not stuck to the same place. They have freedom of movement, but they too remain within the element that produced them. The Pesukim say that the water produced these creatures, and they still live within the water. Then you get to the animals, and now it starts getting a little different. The pasuk says, "Totseh haaretz," the earth should produce, bring forth these animals, but they don't stay connected. They live on the earth, but they're not intrinsically linked to the earth any longer. So he writes, "There's an increasing independence. It progressively increases until it reaches the level of man." And man is only part essence created from the earth. That's where the whole change takes place in Bria. Till then, everything is from a physical standpoint. Even though Rashi talks about Elyonim v'Tachtonim, but the Elyonim that we talk about are physical. It's the heavens. It's a location. But when it gets to man, that's where there's a new element, not of this earth, not of this universe, but Hashem breathes into man of Hashem. And that's where it's no longer a creature bound inherently with this earth. It's made part of this earth, but part from somewhere else completely. And lastly, before we get into the main point of the night, it's all connected, as you'll see. When Hirsch describes the word behema, so he says something very important here. Behemas are subordinated to man. This is part of how man can ascend and be man. Without oxen to work for him, man would have had to harness himself to the plow and wagon, perform backbreaking work, and carry heavy loads. Under the exhausting physical burden, his intellect would have gradually decayed, never to recover. When oxen were harnessed to the plow and wagon, and the sheep grazed on their own, with no great exertion required on man's part, man's intellect was free for study and for contemplation of heaven and earth. His mind was free to think while he plowed his field and shepherded his flock. Now listen to this. Thanks to the behema, man attained his spiritual height. Behemto becomes bamaso. Hirsch says in his classic understanding of the Hebrew language, the two are one, really one shorish. I'm not going to get into the technical stuff. If you want to see it, it's on page 37 in the new commentary. But a bama we know is an elevation. A bama that they used to bring for Karbanasan. A behema is a part of man's elevation. Without the behema, man would have to be so entrenched in matters of this world. But Hashem gives man a behema so that man can become elevated and not become too entrenched in matters of this world. It becomes easier, and now our minds are free. Okay, all of that is a precursor to what now we have, and you'll hear it, it'll all fit in momentarily. Here we go. So in Pasuk, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chavav, the Torah says as follows, Vayomer Elokim na'aseh Adam b'tzalmenu kidmusenu. Let us make an Adam And he writes in parentheses in the translation, a deputy, which I'll explain how it gets to mean that, in a form worthy of us, in keeping with our image, the Yirdu Vidagas Hayam, they shall exercise dominion over the fish of the sea, Uva Ot Hashonayim, and the birds of the sky, Uva Behema, and over animals, Uva Chola Aretz, and over the whole earth, Uva Chola Remes Aremes Ala Aretz, and all creeping things that creep on the earth. So, okay. So let's talk about, first of all, why it's said the way it is, let us. I know there's a Rashi that Rashi says Hashem is teaching us humility. He didn't need to consult with anyone, but he's teaching us humility. There's a famous Rashi about that. This is not where Hirsch is going at all with this. He says the following. This is the use of the pluralis majestatis, or whatever, some Greek term. The royal we. What's the royal we? When a benevolent king is concerned about his empire, a good king, not a tyrant. So the things that he does are not for himself. He's essentially an agent for the people. They give him their tax money, and he, with his wisdom and concern for the people, will then dispense it and invest it for the good of everyone. When Hashem uses the term Nase Adam, so who is he talking to? And apparently, and Hirsch points out, different than every other thing that happened in creation, there's this grand announcement before the creation. There's no announcements before anything else other than the creation of man. Because everything that was now there before was waiting for this moment. The announcement, Nasa Adam, was essentially Hashem saying to the universe that he created, man arriving on the scene will be for your benefit if man if Adam is Adam, which we'll soon explain what the word Adam means. It's really for your good, just as a benevolent king. So Hashem's not consulting with anyone the way Hirsch understands it. He's proclaiming that everything I've done till now is so that there'll be an Adam who will now use all this for the purposes that it was designed for in the first place. And if done right, then everything will have meaning and purpose, and it'll be for its good, and it'll all flourish. So now, let's understand this word Adam. So he writes that he has a whole essay on the subject in Collected Writings, Volume 8. You can check it out there. But here he summarizes what he wrote there. So again, he points out the uniqueness of man is he's not created entirely from the earth. The breath of God breathed into his earthly frame, that is what makes him into man. Okay, the very fact that a grand announcement is made here testifies that the term Adam signifies man's exalted purpose. So he says, firstly, the word Adam is related to the word Adam, the color red. Red light, if you look at a prism, so you have white light that shines through a prism. Red light in the colors, the spectrum, is the least refracted of all light. So if we understand the white light as Kedusha, or Hashem's light, and if Adam is Adam, if man is that in this physical world, but is yet somehow more spiritual than everything else on earth, then man is, he captures the essence of Hashem as close as possible, whatever can be perceived. As he writes, he's the closest manifestation of the divine, and through him, God's presence is revealed on earth. Often Hirsch uses the term throughout his writings, and if you don't know this, you don't know what he's talking about, man is red. And this is what he's talking about right here. We are in the prism that, in the physical world, that which senses Hashem the most, the least filtered, the least refracted of the light, is Adam. As he walks through the world and understands that there's God in the world and lives his life that way, we embody the Ratzon Hashem in this world, and we bring it to life. The next thing Hirsch says, and this is what I struggled with, and Baruch Hashem, from my conversation with Moshe Katz and a little more thought, I think I got it. Hirsch writes another similarity in the word Adam to the word Hadom. Hadom is a footstool. And there's a famous pasuk, Hashemayim Kisi, the Aretz Hadom Ragloi. Heaven is my throne, but the world is my footstool. But Adam, we are Hadom Ragle Hashchina. We are the footstool for the feet of the Shechina. So Hirsch writes as follows. This is this little tangent. First of all, before I get to the tangent, the simple pshat and what this means is similar to what we said before. There's red, where we sense God the most. And also, when a person puts their foot on a footstool, so their whole being isn't there, but they stretch onto the footstool. There's like, they made their imprint. And the footstool carries a part of them, like extends down to that spot. So we, as humans, the way we live our lives with the Ratzon Hashem, we are that part of the universe where the imprint of Hashem can be sensed, where the feet, Kaviyachol, God's feet stretch, and through us, God is sensed. But Hirsch writes an interesting thing, connected to what we said before with Behema and Bama. There's a difference between Hadom and a Bama. A Bama serves to elevate the lowly. That's what a Behema does for an Adam, where instead of getting entrenched in this world, the animal does that for us, and then humans can be elevated and think about other stuff. That's a Bama. But a Hadom, a footstool, is something else. A footstool, he says, spares the exalted from having to place his feet on the earth. And this is all like a parenthetical piece here. Had Adam not been appointed as Hadom, had Adam not been this footstool, God himself would have to actualize all the truth and mercy, all the justice and love that he wishes to be realized on earth. And apparently that's asking too much of God. God didn't want that. God's too supreme to be so involved in this world. And that shook me up a bit, because everything that I know in the writings of Hirsch, other than this paragraph, talk about Ikur Shechina B'Tachtonim, that Hashem does come down to this earth. And that's all true. But this is a key to understanding that. It's not that Hashem himself wants to directly be here. He does, and he needs to sometimes shake it up with open miracles. But the way Hashem wants it, he wants it to happen through his agent. And if necessary, it's kilo a burden on Hashem to have to then step in and get directly involved. But he really wanted there to be, through free will of humans, the will of Hashem being exercised in this world, and not Hashem himself having to run the show. He didn't need to make a world for that, apparently. But he writes, when man does the will of his creator, God is spared from having to descend to do his will on earth. Adam is Hadom for the Shechina, whereas Behema is Bama for Adam. So it works in steps. For humans, it wouldn't just be a degradation of our involvement. It would ruin everything we're supposed to do. We can't think about God if we're so busy working all day in the fields. Whereas when it comes to Hashem, that's something else. Hashem can do whatever he wants. He can get involved in this world and do everything. But the Kedushas Hashem, it seems, decided that's not what he wants to happen in this world. And it would almost be a degradation to come down and do it all the time. See, that's where he put man in. Man's going to do the Ratzon Hashem in this world. So the Ikur Shechina B'Tachtonim that we're going to talk about over and over again in his writings is through us carrying out Hashem's mitzvahs, that's where the Shechina can be found. Hashem would rather be that way than Hashem directly himself doing things. Even though he does at times have to shake things up and directly get involved. So again, we have red, Adam, man is this that senses the most, and we have Hadom Ragloi. Similarly, he writes, the word Adam is related to Chasam. This is again his family of letters. Aleph is a guttural letter, and it's related to a bunch of letters. The Ches and the Aleph are similar, and the Dalet in Adam is similar to the Tuf. He has a whole bunch of letters that are levels of intensity. So Adam is related to the word chasam, which is a seal. The inference is that man is the seal of God on creation. He is the seal through which the world can recognize its unseen master, which Hashem wants it to be that way. But through our living by the Ratz Hashem, that's where you see Hashem. And finally, he says, Adam is related to Dama, which seems similar. And with an individual, hold on. The purpose of man is to be a likeness of God, but he's to effect this likeness through his own free and dynamic power. That's the whole point of everything we've been talking about with free will. We're similar to Hashem in the sense that he gave us this ability to choose. And that's the way Hashem wants it. We will choose to then do the Ratzon Hashem. And through our choices, that's where the Shekhinah is most noticed, that there's a part of the Bria that could decide and does decide to live it out. And he writes something that I need to think about some more. In other words, man is a representative and alter ego of God. Alter ego, it's a strange term, but those are the words here in English. So think about that on your own. And he concludes, all these concepts are essentially one. As Adam, bed, Hadam, footstool, Chosen, the seal, and Adam, meaning this likeness, man has but one purpose. Everything is capsulized by the concept of substitution. Adam, then, is a representative and deputy. And just to conclude for tonight, he writes, if man controls the creatures as Adam, and he was given mastery, he was given all of them, right? Hashem said, you should subordinate all of them under your rule. If a man does this, b'tzelem Elokim u'b'demuso, then they willingly accept the yoke of his control. The whole universe responds in kind. His control does not constitute subjugation and degradation, but is an elevation for them and involves them in divine freedom. Even the parts of the creation that have no free will, a rock and an animal and a bird and a whatever, but they become part of this whole idea of what he's calling divine freedom. The fact that man has given Bechira, and if man lives the right way, then everything becomes part of that Bechira, and the whole world sings a declaration of wanting to do the Ratzon Hashem. The whole world submits willingly to man who is pure and who serves his creator. If, however, man misuses his position and does not control the world's creatures as Adam, and now you know what Adam means, if man doesn't behave as Adam, as the representative and deputy of God, but by his own power and by the might of his own hand, then the living creatures do not willingly submit to him. As our sages have taught, and he quotes a gracious rabbi, Es shehu b'tzalmenu kidnusenu v'yirdu. He who is in our image and like us, v'yirdu, they should subjugate, and they will subjugate the world, and the world will allow the subjugation. Es she'eno b'tzalmenu kidnusenu v'yirdu. Then everything is going to be on the decline. Zachu v'yirdu. Loi zachu v'yirdu. So if the universe is lucky and man does what man is supposed to do, it's good for the universe. If they're not zeichah, because man doesn't behave as Adam, then it's a decline for everything. It's kind of reminded me of the famous quote from the Seel Sasharim about Yaakov Avinu, that the rocks fought and they said, Allah yaniach, tzaddik is rosho, right? That they all clamored that the tzaddik should rest his head on them, and then it became one, so they all got it. Even the rocks don't talk, it's all medrash. But the idea is the same, that there's a purpose to a rock when it serves a good function. And lastly, later Hirsch talks about when Cain kills Hevel, and the blood of Hevel gets soaked into the earth. So he says that the klolo that happens is an automatic klolo, because it was already built into the Bria. It was designed to have the DNA of the Bria this way. That the klolo is automatic, because the world was designed to respond in kind to wherever man is at. So to sum it up, Adam is very elevated. Everything we've been talking about in creation is to get to this moment where Adam has its task, his definition. Well, next we talk about what the goal is of man, and how do you do that? We'll talk about Hashem's desire for man to have family and society, and what marriage is about. I don't know if we'll get yet to the original sin with the Nachash. I don't know. We'll see how much we can cram in for next week. But I really believe that what we spoke about tonight is so fundamental. It's going to come up a lot. So the next time you hear Man is Red, hopefully you'll know what we're talking about.